You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report podcast. Thanks to our host and sponsor, Saucy Brewworks here at the corner of Michigan and 3rd. I am Patrick Murphy. We are without Brian Phillips and Bart Logan today, but that means we've got Grant Miller back. Grant, you were on a couple weeks ago. Thanks for coming back out, kind of last minute, as Brian and Bart both have family things going on this evening, and Sam's going to do more talking than he normally does.
Fine.
This isn't an exciting podcast. We've got to talk about another Crew 1-0 loss, this time on the road to Philadelphia. A disappointing game, I think we would all agree, given kind of how it played out. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the U.S. Women's National Team game that was here at Lower.com Field almost at the same time as the Crew were losing to Philly. The women did not lose. I think the final score was 9-1, right, Sam?
9-1.
Yeah, you were there for that one. And then we'll get into some Crew 2 talk a little bit. They got a win also at Philly. The two teams both played at Subaru Park, the first time these teams have done that. So things are going well for Crew 2, not so well for the first team, and the U.S. Women's National Team just kind of does what they do against a team like Uzbekistan, who then they play again on Tuesday night in Philly. But we'll start with the Crew, because that's what we're really here to talk about, and we'll get into Aloy Room in a minute. But I want to start with the confusing nature of this team right now, because season started pretty well. 7 goals in the first 2 games. Disappointed to drop that game at San Jose after being up 3-1. Come back home, give up an early goal to Toronto. Okay, fine, you come back and win. Things had been looking pretty good. Get a draw in New York against the Red Bulls. These last 2 games, though, you're really disappointed with the result. You don't want to lose at home, especially to a Nashville team that's been on the road. And then this Philly game, I think we all were not necessarily optimistic about it, but the way it played out, the Crew had their chance. I mean, Philly had plenty of chances too. The game ends 1-0, but I felt like this could have been, and we were just talking about it right before we started recording, Grant, this could have been 4-4. It could have, I mean, there were chances both ways, mistakes at the back for both teams. It was not what you think of a 1-0 game when you look at the final score there.
No, certainly not. I think the instinct is to kind of group these two past results together to 1-0 losses. This game at Philly was significantly more wide open than the Nashville game. I was certainly not bored watching the match against Philly, but yeah, you're right. It kind of, the tone kind of matches the dreary weather that we're having here in Columbus Monday. It's tough right now. I kind of did a little bit of research before I came here, and I kind of was like, I felt this feeling before. I couldn't quite place it. In the 2018 season, the Crew lost 2 1-0 games back-to-back against D.C. and Chicago. The D.C. game was like in Annapolis. Okay. And it was kind of a similar kind of moment at the beginning of the season where it's like, this team's talented. We know we got something here. Maybe we outplayed them both games. I guess what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of games in front of us. It's very easy to overreact right now because they're still very early. And we do have high expectations because we've seen what we're capable of. So it's tough. We'll get into the details. I had low expectations going into the game. But you're right. When you kind of see it play out, you're so close to burying a couple there. You want to see him finish.
I think all things considered, and this is what we talked about last week, is that this game really should have been a tie. Period.
Absolutely.
And if it wasn't for a mistake by Aloy Room, which we'll get to later, this game would have very much probably been a tie. I think what this afforded Philly to do, having that early accidental goal, is that for them to not park the bus, but kind of like sit back and try to bait Columbus into coming towards them. And I obviously didn't watch the game because I was covering the U.S. women's game, but I was listening to it, and it looked like the Crew did not play a bad game. And that's probably what makes it more frustrating, is that you play so well, but you can't put the ball in the back of the net and then hope that the goals will come era eventually shows up again.
Right. And, I mean, the I think a buzzword that went around, and it's a buzzword in soccer these last several years, but two words really, expected goals. Caleb Porter brought it up last week, and Crew, you can look at different, there's different metrics, different sites that track this stuff, and everyone's a little different on how they measure expected goals, and we're actually going to have a piece on Massive Report about this that Elliot McKinley, who does stuff with America Soccer Analysis as well, is going to do for us, kind of looking just at how true the expected goals situation is. But the truth of the matter is the Crew are either at the top of the league or very near that so far this season. And you could see in the Philly game, the chances are coming. The chances came against Nashville. Now, Sam, I may think you make a good point, and I think you go back to Nashville, you give that goal didn't come as early. It came 28 minutes in, I think. But you give up an early goal, now a team can sit back, especially Philly at home, and they did push forward more, and actually they could have doubled the lead a few minutes after, about 10-15 minutes after off of another set piece where the Crew kind of just stand and watch. I think it was Yao Yeboah was marking. But, you know, it wasn't like Philly was throwing numbers forward after they took a lead, and that helps you create some of the expected goals numbers. But I still like a lot of what the Crew are doing to get in good spots. I thought Derek Etienne had some really clever, he had the one flick to Pedro Santos late that Pedro put just wide. He had a shot of his own. Miguel Berry got in a good spot once, just didn't get enough on it. So I think there are positives here that the ball is going to go in the net. Right now, I just think the Crew was so reliant on Lucas Zelrayan to score early in the season, and no one else has gotten going. You know, Etienne a little bit early on.
Etienne's still bringing the heat. I mean, yeah. you still saw that edge from him. I think you kind of mentioned it. They played well and for large stretches of the game, where compared to Nashville, where, you know, it's a little different perspective because, you know, I was watching from the Nordic and against Nashville, but it did feel like the pass before the pass was off. Touches were a little heavy. You can tell, like, hey, these guys are coming out of a break. It's a little rusty. Philly, they, like, looked in sync. I mean, they were on the same page a lot of times. They knew where, you know, that attacker run was going to be. The run to set up another run was there. They just couldn't get it past Blake or on net in a way that's, you know, dangerous. And that's what's frustrating, because you know everyone here is capable of that. That's another thing. It's not like we're playing a bunch of kids and you're like, hey, they got to work through some things. Like, Pedro can score. Miguel can score.
To be fair, yeah. Getting things past Blake is not an easy task to start with. And when you put yourself behind 1-0 early, that doesn't help your cause. And it even kind of, like, I don't want to say it gives you the yips, but it adds an extra level of pressure.
A little bit.
Yeah, you're pressing a little harder to try to get that.
Right. In hockey, they'd be gripping the stick a little tight. But
yeah, and you're right. On the road against a good team. Now, they didn't challenge Andre Blake all that much. He had the one good save. I think it came from a Zelrayan shot that he tipped over the crossbar. But, you know, Lucas again had a free kick that went just wide, just like he did against Nashville. Yeah. I am a little concerned about Miguel. And, you know, we've talked a lot about Miguel Giassi, and I don't want to make this a debate because Giassi's not scoring when he gets his chances either. But there was a chance in the first half where he was in the box and just didn't get much on it. In the second half, I think there was an Etienne shot that Blake bobbled, and it rolled a little ways, and he just doesn't react quickly enough. And the opportunities he was getting last year aren't as clear-cut so far this season because he's a guy people are scouting.
Caleb said at the beginning of the year it's going to be more difficult for him to get these opportunities now that guys know who he is. And there was a couple of, like, crosses early, too, where it's like, man, I feel like he should have started that run just a step sooner. Or it feels like last year he would have been in, like, this spot more. So, yeah, it is concerning. It's still early, but he can make or break where we're at right now.
You bring up a really good point, though. The Crew now is 2-2-2, is that right?
Yep.
So in the first three or four games, the changes that they made or any adjustments that they made in the offseason, teams have now enough tape to be able to be like, okay, we can do this here, we can do this here, we can frustrate. I mean, if you remember, I'm going to bring it to the Blue Jackets for a second, but when the Blue Jackets swept Tampa Bay,
mm-hmm.
the biggest thing that they did in that series that they didn't do anywhere else, is just frustrate Tampa Bay.
Yep.
They didn't defend them necessarily well. They just frustrated them. And I think that's what teams are doing to the Crew now, is that they're frustrating them, and when they get flustered, they can't score.
Well, and here's the biggest thing, I think. And I think if you look at every goal the Crew's given up, almost every goal the Crew's given up, there's a mistake that's getting capitalized on. And, you know, maybe this transitions us into the Aloy thing here, because Philly didn't have to do anything for that. But you would think that would, you know, the returns to the mean type of thing, where, okay, these mistakes aren't getting... I mean, you look at Nashville. Now, Nashville did create a few other chances, but Pedro slips, and you could make an argument that maybe Pedro takes a better initial position so he doesn't have to backtrack, but Pedro slips, and it's a free header into the goal. You know, and
yeah.
There's just been a lot of those so far, and they've almost all been... There's just... And in this game, actually, there were... You know, Jonathan had a couple of those giveaways out of the back that you don't like to see, but he's been known to do from time to time, and it didn't cost the Crew. I think Pedro had one too, just some bad passing there. So it is starting to revert to the mean a little bit, but you know, you still get punished for a mistake by one of your players.
You get punished, but you still hope this team's good enough to at least score one or at least score two. I mean, it's still. Both things can be true, where, like, yes, room is very frustrating. We're going to get into this. You wish you didn't have to put up with that with your keeper. But at the same time, he's not the guy that needs to be finishing goals. And, I mean, I think both can be true. Both of you can be very frustrated with some of his moments while also thinking, yeah, he needs a little – I mean, it's like a pitcher in baseball. Like, yeah, he needs some run support, you know? Like, yeah. It's hard being to be like, hey, man, you got to pitch a shutout every night. Like – Nah, it's nice when you get some goals early. So,
well, let's get into the Aloy situation. I mean, what was it? 3 minutes into the game,
if that.
Yeah,
if that.
Cross comes in from Aloy's left. Philly's attacking right side. Now they said on the broadcast, yeah, 2 minutes in is what they listed as. They said on the broadcast it was windy at Subaru Park. I don't think. Trying to watch it back before we started recording, I didn't think the wind had too much of an effect. It's not easy to tell the flight of the ball based on the camera
angle.
It's
tough not being under it, you know.
But looking at it, they have an angle, at least on the replay that's online, they have an angle from kind of behind the goal, and it honestly looked like he went up and had it and just brought his hands down before he had secured the ball. And then you can tell because it doesn't, you know, if he just knocked it straight down because his arms come down, he, you know, the ball would go straight down, not into the goal. So because I think he's thinking, move and catch the ball, go forward, his arm knocks it back in, and obviously it's into the goal. You know, Aloy has been very good for this team since he got here. There are some mistakes. He's not a perfect keeper. I mean, it's hard to find those in the world. But
they don't stick around long in MLS either.
No, they don't. And we know that about as much as any team. But to me, I texted a buddy after I saw the goal go in, and I was like, did he gamble against the Crew? And I was kidding. You know, let's be clear here. I don't think that I know Aloy's not gambling against the Crew, but I mean, it looked so much like he just tossed the ball in the goal. And, you know, it just, again, like you said, Grant, it puts you behind the eight ball from an early point. Maybe you said it, Sam. Puts you behind the eight ball early on in the game, and now you've got to push for that goal, and you just can't have that from a guy that's been as good as him.
I mean, the upside is, well, no. The upside is he did make saves later in the game.
Yeah, and
good saves.
Yes.
And that's, so it didn't mentally get to him, but also, again, this team, and not just Aloy, this whole team has a propensity to have this momentary mental lapse, and it costs them. And it's cost them every time.
Yeah.
It cost them some in 2020.
Yeah.
It cost them some in. It definitely cost them a lot in 2021.
Yeah.
It's still costing them, and it's like teams will have that everywhere, but it's how often that's more concerning than it is that it's happening.
Right. Feels more frequent. Going back even to 2020, I mean, there's a lot of, like, I think we kind of rose-colored glasses of that season, but there were, like, some away games where we were like, how did we lose that? Like,
yeah.
Oh, a weird back pass?
And, yeah. I think two, early in this season, Lucas Zelarayán was bailing you out. You know, you think about, I mean, obviously the first game, Vancouver just wasn't ready for what the Crew had to offer. Yeah. But, you know, you go down early with the penalty kick in San Jose. Well, Lucas Zelarayán scores two goals, and, you know, you're winning that game. And, you know, you're disappointed with the tie. Again, you know, you come back, you go down to against Toronto. It's ultimately Lucas Zelarayán that's the difference. Now, he wasn't that way in New York, and I thought at the time that that might be a sign of, okay, this team can do things. He wasn't even on the field when Nagby scored that goal. This team can do things. And I did think the counterattack was good. I jotted down. Etienne had a really good shot that was saved. Herrera had a good chance he put over. Pedro had the one that went just wide. So these guys are there. They're in the right spots. You know, this is where that expected goals comes in. But you got to start putting them in the net. And, you know, again, I don't mean to harp on Miguel Barry, but him and Giassi's, whoever's up there, that's their response. I mean, everybody's, you know, when you get in the spot, you got to score. But to take the pressure off of Lucas, who at about the 84th minute, now granted, could have been that his knee was bothering him, but he plays a ball to Herrera just outside the box, and he just kind of puts his hands on his knees.
He was gassed.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw that at times last year. This team is too talented to
be a one-trick
pony. Yeah, 6 games into the season, your playmaker is already feeling tired because he's carrying this team so much. And, you know, the Aloy mistake, we joke about it if they tie that game or they come back and win it as opposed to losing the game. And now it's a thing we really have to talk about is, like, what the heck?
That's probably one of the most frustrating things is that you know that you have the capable talent on this team. Mm-hmm. And you see it, like, it's even more frustrating when they play a good game and then they still lose on a mistake of their own.
Yeah.
Like, they really did all the work, even for the other team.
Yeah, it's not like
game.
Philly, like, buried one on a free kick and you're like, hey, what do you do to that? You know, it very felt much like everything was self-inflicted. Like, you just brought up Marrera's miss. That was the one where they countered off the Philly corner and were, like, 6-on-3. And I was like, oh, they're gonna equalize here. Like, I'm still very confident in this team's ability to do that. And then the ball's right in the front of the net to a guy who is capable of putting it away. He's a very good fullback. He's attack-minded for being a defender. And it goes 14 rows up. And, yeah, I think there were some bright spots to it. I thought I'm gonna butcher the name. Gimke,
James.
James. We'll call him James. Complete like a shot of adrenaline to the team and changed kind of the kind of attack moving forward. I thought he looked great. I thought this was one of Dejnik's better performances. He really looked confident getting the ball forward into different phases of the game, which I think is a huge asset that we've needed as like a kind of more of like attack-centric center back in the modern game of soccer where you kind of need guys like that. So I'm not ready to, you know, sell my season tickets yet and say this is over, but what we expect from this team isn't what we're getting.
Agreed. And I think it is important to point out, like you said, Grant, it's certainly not – the season is not in peril right now. Now, I think we have been at times on this podcast too quick to – or not quick enough maybe in years when it has gone bad to point things out. But, you know, the Crew is currently in 7th place. They have 8 points. 2nd place has 11. That's Orlando, who they're playing this week. We'll get to them. But, you know, so you're not – it's not to a point where I'm concerned or I think anyone should be concerned. I do think you want to see them start scoring goals from other people than Zelarayán and Etienne.
And Orlando's coming off of a 3-2 win against Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago's first loss.
Loss.
Yeah.
And somebody scored a hat-trick for Orlando. Before we get
too far away from it, I do want to go back to Room because I think if we're going to point out his error, we should also point out where he came up big.
Some huge one-on-one, point blank.
Right. He kept the Crew in this game. You know, we said that Andre Blake didn't have to do a ton. I mean, he did have some – he's credited with 4 saves. A few of those were slow rollers that just he could pick up. But, yeah, you're
tough
right.
Grounders.
Yeah, there were a few that Room had to you know, make up for mistakes at the back, or even just good play by Philly
to get through there. Yeah, he had to earn his paycheck. I mean, he's a good goalkeeper.
He is a shot stopper.
he absolutely is.
I think there's no question about that. I do question, you've seen some times on the crosses, though we've never seen anything that bad. And then I think at times he could be a bit more mobile in the box.
He doesn't control that box in the same way that we've had guys for the Crew before. And I think that's kind of frustrating. He's a different style of keeper. I mean, and I, you know, it's different for, I think, a lot of the diehard fans to see that. But, I mean, like, one-on-one in front of net, and he drops down, butterflies, sticks the leg out, and saves it. It's kind of unorthodox to look at, but keeps your team in it. And I don't know if there's too many other guys in MLS. Like, I think a lot of teams in MLS have goalie issues.
Yeah,
like, the top four or five probably don't.
It's not an easy position to fill with a guy who gives you elite play week after week. I think back to when he was playing with Curaçao in the Gold Cup before he came to the Crew, and just some of the saves he made during that run, you know, that obviously alerted the Crew. I think the Crew were aware of him. He was somebody on their radar, but that tournament really made him the number one target to replace Zach Steffen. And, you know, I don't think you're trading Aloy Room for many goalkeepers.
You can never replace Zach Steffen.
Well, right. But
I think, you know, I'm still at a point where I still do trust the front office. If there was someone better this offseason, I think they probably would have tried harder to pursue him. But it was pretty early on that he was their guy. And I don't know. I mean, until the wheels really fall off, I don't know how much better you can do. You hope Schulte is like a stud, and you get him in here and develop young talent, because we've been really blessed as a fan base to have really good keepers for a long time. So it is something we expect. I don't know. It's just very frustrating.
Yeah. You don't like to see that, and you know, mistakes happen, and I think, you know, one mistake the other way, instead of Aloy doing that, we're talking about potentially a Crew win in Philly, you know, if that flips the other way. And Andre Blake has made mistakes throughout his career. Let's not pretend like maybe not that exact mistake, but, you know, there have been errors. So, you know, I think it's just unfortunate that these two games happen back-to-back, because if you just look at it, if you're not really dialed in to how everything's happening, if you just watch the games, you know, I think you're kind of, you know, what the heck, this team can't score all of a sudden.
Yeah, and you look at that goal trend, it's like 4-3-2. I saw it on Twitter, but it looks rough.
Right. Well, let's go to what wasn't rough, Sam, and that was the U.S. women. As we mentioned, 9-1 against Uzbekistan. You were there. Thomas was there. You were photographing, but you got a good view of the game. Give us the lowdown on it.
There's not too much of a lowdown, because if you've gone into this game expecting anything less, then you haven't been watching, one, the U.S. women's national team,
or two,
don't know what type of country Uzbekistan is. So
I think they're like 46th in the world, which is...
That might be a little high, actually.
Yeah, but even... I mean, in the women's game, there aren't as many countries that play as the men. So
true.
46 is different.
And for a society and culture like Uzbekistan, having a women's team is actually a really big deal. And to be honest, in the great scheme of things, they played a fairly decent game. Don't let the scoreline fool you, because they actually put in some effort. Unfortunately, they don't have the skill level to match with a young and hungry, like, a lot of your regulars did not play, but you had, you know, Rose Lavelle, and you had just a few of the bigger names just kind of mentoring the younger ones, the next coming generation of the U.S. women's national team. In the first 15 minutes or so, the U.S. women could not hit the broadside of a barn. And, like, we're talking, like, point-blank misses or saves. Uzbekistan's goalie did a really great job. But once they scored that first goal, kind of all the floodgates opened, and within, I think, 15 or 20 seconds of the first goal, they scored the second, and then a few minutes later, they scored the third, and then they knocked out six in fairly consecutive fashion in the second half. So It was about what you expect. It's like, as I said to a fellow photographer, it's like when Ohio State brings in like Akron,
yeah,
or something like that. You're gonna get your money, but you're gonna take a beating, and they're gonna play them twice. This was, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this was a substitute opponent for right. who they were supposed to
yeah,
play.
I was just gonna say, if people haven't paid attention or whatnot, yeah, there was supposed to be. I've been told it was Japan. I know it was another Asian opponent, a highly ranked Asian opponent was what we were told, but I heard from somebody else that it was supposed to be Japan, which would have been a much more interesting game. But the one thing I did like, and I didn't see the game, obviously I was watching the Crew game, but reading Thomas's recap and seeing some stuff on Twitter, it does seem like you got a good view of some of the next potential stars in the U.S. women's national team, which I think is a cool thing, you know. You can bring them in against a team like that, get them that experience, get them used to, you know, putting on that jersey, which can be a nerve-wracking thing the first time, second time you do it, and you know, get your feet wet in a kind of comfortable game like that. That
yeah, know. and doing that, they absolutely did that. There was a couple of ladies, and now I don't have the roster or the game recap in front, that scored their first international goal with the U.S. women, so that was really a big deal. It was great to watch them celebrate. With like watch their teammates celebrate them as they scored their first international goal. And but yeah, if you're looking for a good, I mean, they did wholesale changes in the second half. If you're looking for a good practice game, these are definitely it, and a good intro to see how these players can play together. So it was good to see. There wasn't a lot of people at lower.com field as I thought there would be, but also the weather was crap.
Right. And the Crew game's going, you know.
And the Crew game on at the same time. I had the Crew game in my headphones as I was shooting the women's game.
I do think that it's pretty cool, and, you know, I guess this happens when you build a world-class stadium, but pretty cool. This is the third U.S. soccer game to already take place at lower.com field. And now, you know, we know
it hasn't even been 6 months.
Right. We know what the men... Well, we're getting close. It's been more than six. It hasn't been a year yet. But, you know, we know what the men... The history of the men here in Columbus and at historic Crew Stadium and whatnot. But the fact that the men have already played here twice in two qualifiers, and the women in their first friendly of this little cycle wanted to come and check it out. And the person I talked to from U.S. Soccer when this was first getting announced was really excited. I mean, we were talking on the phone. He was asking me all about lower.com field, and you know, he was like, I've heard great things. He's, you know, he's like, does it live up to the billing? And I was like, yeah, you know, I've been to Cincinnati, I've been to Austin, and I mean, we've talked about in this podcast what we think of the stadium, but they were really excited about it. And you know, I think you're going to continue to see more of these things here. Obviously, the men's situation is going to be different next cycle because they don't have to qualify for the World Cup with it being on U.S. Canadian.
I can see a lot of friendlies though, yeah, just to kind of right. as prep
for sure.
leading up to it
for sure. And it does change things a little bit for the men because there's not a ton of teams that are open just because they're qualifying for World Cup. You could see some more Canadian Mexican friendly games though because those teams don't have to qualify.
Yeah, by all means, yeah,
yeah. But I do think it's pretty cool that they have. They've been here three times already and are looking for more already.
I want to say, opponents notwithstanding, the U.S. women scored three times as many goals as the men did in two games.
That is true.
So, just saying.
Yeah, well, we know that that's, you know, it's a different... The women are on a whole different level than the men. They've got World Cup titles and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, that was fun. Let's look at the Crew 2 game. Sam, I know you watched that. I watched most of it. Crew 2 wins 1-0. It was Jason... Hold on, I had the name here.
Weirdly spelled Jason.
Yes, it is Jason with a C.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's like G-A-C-Y.
Yeah, it was a something. Second half goal.
Mm-hmm. It was a header. It was
the next generation of kids.
It was a nice goal.
Jason Russell Rowe, that is yeah. assisted by yeah. Alex Matan. And mm-hmm. I think that's probably where we... should focus the most is there were three Crew first, technically four if you count Brady Scott, who has played his second game with Crew 2, but technically on loan from the first team because Crew 2 doesn't have any goalkeepers on their roster. Him and Schulte have both played. But the three guys that people were a little bit surprised by, Matan, Josh Williams and Aiden Morris. But this is what this team is kind of there for, both Josh and Aiden coming back from missing time with injuries. Matan hasn't played much, but is a guy they want to be ready. You know, you saw him towards the end of the first team game. This is awesome that they can do that. You know, both games were in Philly too, so this allowed for that to be easier than, okay, well, we need these guys in Philly today, but the Crew 2 team's playing back in Columbus. Can we hustle them back? You know, that's a bit of a
mess. Logistically, it made sense for, you know, I imagine Caleb's involved in this process you know, the rest of the coaches to say, hey, you know, Aiden needs some minutes, and let's make sure Josh is fully healthy, and, hey, they're going to be playing here. Get them a jersey, and we'll see you back in Columbus. You know, this isn't like the AHL in hockey where it's like you got to go to a different city and, you know, logistic nightmare. Like, this is very much set up to be cohesive between both teams. So I did not watch it. I was on the golf links taking advantage of
–
yeah, no, it was delightful. But – I was excited to see Matan played what? He played like 60 minutes or something like that? Yeah, and it kind of ran through him. It's like, yeah, absolutely it should.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, he was the Zellerayan. The offense went through him a lot. I mean, almost everything they did in the first half was through him. Obviously, I said he got the assist on the goal. And I think not only, you know, getting him minutes, but getting him confidence. I mean, this is a guy who had chances last year, couldn't score.
He got so close, though. I mean, of all the wings last year, he was the one like that was really like, all right, he's in front of the net at least.
Right. And I would have liked to see him score, you know, even if it's that level. I was talking to our friends at Brotherly Game today, one of the guys, Matt Ralph, and you know, he said the guy that stood out to him watching it live in person was Aiden Morris.
And that's the Philly SB Nation
website
for those of you.
Yeah. But I think that's what you want to see when guys go down, right? You want to see them control the game, you know, be a big part of it, especially if you're playing in the middle of the field like Aiden was.
Yeah, you hope that a guy like that stands out. If he didn't, we'd be asking some different questions. But.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought Scott played a good game in goal.
Yeah.
He was almost basically playing like a fifth defender because he was outside of his box so much.
That's pretty tight.
But the Crew were pressing so much further up in Philly's zone that they, like, basically the back line was at the midline. So that was it was really good to see. It almost bit them a couple of times, but again, Brady Scott was out there to kind of help fend that off, and that was.
And they did three center backs, and then Farsi and Sands were kind of pushed up a little bit, right? Or was it four?
No, I think
standard
it was four.
It was four. Yeah.
Four. Okay.
Farsi is he talked, and we should have a story on him, hopefully this week.
He's an interesting asset.
Yeah, definitely a guy who's in the Canadian youth national team picture. A guy that was a big get for them. You know, obviously Tim Bezbachenko came from Toronto, but Corey Ray, who's the Crew 2 general manager, is Canadian and was really excited about landing Farsi. And he's more of a right back, but they're playing him as a center back because he's athletic enough. Like you said, Sam, they want to play that high line so he can read the game really well and has the speed if he needs to get back.
He's a really good distributor, too.
Yeah, and he can play, you know, almost as like a stopper pushing up a little bit further. And I think it's good that we talked about this because people are going to have their chance, if they want, to see this team in person for the first time this Friday. Crew 2 playing its first home game at historic Crew Stadium. So I think if people want to start to get familiar, I know watching these games on a streaming them on a website isn't the easiest thing to do for a lot of people, and I don't know how many people are that invested at this point, but I do think it would be cool to see fans come out. It sounds like there's a good amount of interest from fans, at least for this first game. I've watched some of the other games. I've watched two of the Crew 2 games, and I've put on a couple of the other ones just when I'm not doing anything on my computer, and the attendance has not been great at most of the places I've seen. I don't know if some teams
I think Philly was completely empty.
Yeah, some teams, when they played, before they played Orlando, I was trying to get it loaded on my PlayStation so I could watch it on the television. Before they played Inter-Miami. And so I tried the first game, and I don't know if there was anyone there, and it didn't look like there was anyone at the Inter-Miami game. So I don't know if some teams just aren't opening the gates or if there just isn't interest. I don't know why you wouldn't. Now, there is staffing and stuff you have to do, security when you have
every
fans.
Situation, organization's different. I mean,
but yeah, that game Friday, I believe it's a 7 o'clock kick.
Under the lights.
Yeah, so it should be fun. We'll have coverage leading up to that and at the game as well. I think it's interesting.
The bubble's already down.
Yeah. Yes, the bubble's been down. Actually,
the academy's been like playing on it. Yeah. I see that on my Twitter. It's like
last week when we were at
as it used to be
at training. I guess they were testing out the sound. They were just blasting music from the stadium, like "Hit Me With Your Best Shot" and songs like that. "We Are the Champions." So I think they were making sure
shock jams.
I think they were making sure that those speakers still work. That
at least they're not on fire.
Good point. And the nice thing about, as you pointed out, Sam, in our text messages, the nice thing about seeing the game in person is you don't have to deal with the audio, which doesn't always line up with what's happening on the game during the stream. And
that was incredibly frustrating. Like, what I'm guessing is that whoever was announcing was like us just watching it on the stream.
Yeah, it seems to be the same guy doing at least a lot of the games.
Yeah, but that means that if their internet is just a little bit behind or they didn't go back to live when it buffered a little bit, they're a solid minute behind. And that was just kind of rough, aside from the fact that they're using the follow cam technology.
Yeah.
And it had
some headaches.
It had some troubles finding where the action was. Or if a player is down on the field and like everybody stopped to check in on him, and it was just all over the place.
Well, they also don't have it doesn't seem to have a second camera, so there's
no it's only the one shot.
Right. There's no replays, there's no reversing, they can't, when the guy's taking a throw in, you can't cut to the sideline camera. Yeah. Things that you're just used to in a broadcast.
And sometimes it's not quite ONN quality, but it's pretty close because like I think Josh Williams came in the second half and I was like, is that 33 or is that what number?
Yeah,
is
it's tough. And the fonts on the MLS Pro Next jerseys aren't giving you any favors.
They were designed by an athlete during a cramp.
that's interesting because doesn't the league like want to use this as like, something for like the little sweetener on the TV deal too?
I mean,
saying one thing and then the production value is another, and you're like, how am I supposed to take this
I think
serious?
There's only so much you can do when you're streaming online for free,
My guess is that I think the production value will go up in like the playoffs, hopefully. Like they'll make it, but also because they're like they are doing it at some of them at MLS stadiums. So, right. Like, yesterday it was at Subaru Park. Yeah. It's like, so you already have the gear there. You just don't have the production truck. But, yeah, who knows?
Yeah. And
this is MLS we're talking about.
Right, exactly. But I will, I hope there's more situations like this in the future where teams, you play in the same location. I guess we could look at the schedule and kind of compare. But it was, like we said, it was great that those guys got minutes.
We have the reverse of that coming up, right? Or like the
September.
Oh, is that not? Okay.
Yeah, it's like late in the season.
Okay.
And also you can send guys, obviously, that aren't going to get big minutes in your game, but a guy like Josh Williams, a guy like Matan, a guy like Aiden Morris, you'd like to have on your bench as they were, and then you can, the next day it's easy to do that. So, and that can happen, too, if you're, the crew are lucky. You could play a home game at lower.com field on a Saturday, like they will this weekend, and, you have Friday night. Usually you'd probably save those guys if it was a Sunday game like it was this week, but you have that option here. I think all we have left is to talk about next week, unless there's anything else you guys are pressing with this team that we
missed.
US
Open Cup draw.
Oh, that's a good call.
Yeah, I meant Detroit on the 19th up in Detroit. I kind of mentioned before we started recording, maybe like how frustrated we get sometimes with US Open Cup and like it not going well for us. Maybe there is a little bit of like, let's get these guys a little bit of run and then before the US Open Cup game. Like I expect to see Matan and Aiden play in that game now just because they played on Sunday. And maybe I'm completely wrong on that, but I don't know. I could see that be a possibility.
I think not just that, but just, the schedule does start to get more congested as you get into the summer and stuff. You're going to have games where you're going to have to rotate. Obviously, you know, knock on wood, it doesn't get as bad as it was last year, but there will inevitably be some injuries or guys that miss time. You know, I imagine, I don't know what, if there's any international stuff before the World Cup, but, yeah.
Outside of Dejanek, I don't think there's anybody else that's...
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless...
They do friendlies or anything this summer.
Yeah. Ghana might. So maybe Aboah.
Yeah.
Maybe Jonathan. But I don't... There's nobody else.
Right.
It's not like last year.
Right. Basically. No, definitely. Yeah. But, yeah, getting those guys minutes to have them ready when things are more congested, I think, is important. And the Open Cup is a part of that. We'll see, you know, how far the crew progress. It's been... Well, it's been a while since they've played an Open Cup game at all because of the last 2 years. Oh, but it's been a while since they've made a run in that tournament. Which
definitely
would,
get... I'll get my hopes up. I always do. You know, and then...
Don't we always do on yeah. on everything crew-related?
Yeah. The cup's special, though, because it's just like it's right there. It's like a little added treat. You know?
Well, and, you know, this... I mean, Caleb Porter, this staff, has only had one run at it in 2019. This is a staff that keeps talking about they want to put trophies in the trophy case. Caleb says that a lot.
Yeah.
So that's an opportunity. And obviously you don't...
Campeones Cup.
Yeah, yeah. They made a bigger
still
deal.
Counts.
Yeah, bigger deal than I expected out of that. So I think...
It's good marketing material, dude. I see them lift that. I see that as like yeah. a highlight, and I get excited every time. I'm a sucker for that stuff.
And I think you have depth, especially if guys are healthy. I think you have the depth to, especially before you start playing MLS teams in this tournament, you know, you should go out there and beat Detroit. I mean, yeah. I haven't looked into Detroit extensively. I read Thomas's piece on our site when
they'll
when
hear
it was
this.
Announced.
Don't say it too loudly yet. They'll come down on you.
Well, that's
there.
I think
they're underestimating.
I think the atmosphere is going to be crazy. How
that's
that translates on
yeah.
the field, though, is you know, we'll see. But yeah, I think there's. I've already talked to a few people that are planning on going up for.
Yeah,
this
we have
game.
At least two.
If it wasn't a school night, you know, I'd be, you know, chomping at the bit to go up there. I like Detroit. My family's from there. It's a cool city. So
yeah, I know Thomas and. Thomas and Drew, who's been on the podcast once already this year, are both planning on going up. So we will have representation up there. I assume Thomas will cover and Drew is going as a fan, but I don't know that for sure. Thomas at least will cover because I will tell him to.
We'll have time to really dive into that next recording,
yeah, sure.
But like I'll stop myself, but I'm already like putting the pieces. Does Hurtado play that game?
Well,
like, I was on the ride over here. I was like, who would as a striker?
I'm honestly surprised Hurtado is not playing with Crew 2.
Yeah, but do you want him taking minutes from the kids?
That's the thing.
No, yeah. but like, give him a half here and there. Like, you got to see
he
what you have
will.
In him because you can't. Your first deployment of him can't be in an MLS game.
Yeah, it didn't sound like Caleb was too high on him when like news broke that he was back. I mean, he was very clearly like, yeah, he's not gonna. But then he's still, like, the third-string guy. I don't know. I don't want to dive too much into the Eric Hurtado experience. But I, every time I see him, I just like, yeah, he's there, man. He's doing his thing.
He is doing
he's
his
giving
thing.
The boys hard minutes on the training ground. And
he does recover.
Looking buff. Yeah.
We've gotten to watch a couple full training sessions. And, you know, say what you will about what he's done with the crew. But he does work hard. But, yeah, that could be a chance. Now, you also have... the Jossie Miguel debate, but and we can get into that more as we get closer to the
yeah.
Open Cup game.
Right now, neither of them are winning this debate because neither of them are scoring.
Well, and you know, you'd hope that they start scoring before then, but could you just, you know, kind of the basketball metaphor of see the ball go in the net? Do you start one of those guys because you hope that they can grab a goal or two and just gain some confidence?
Yeah, I mean, I guess whoever doesn't start against Orlando. Just de facto kind of think like, okay, I guess they'll start against Detroit, but who knows? Who knows? Who knows how Saturday's going to go? I mean, I think they're going to win, but until I see it happening, I'm not going to, you know, see when I believe it.
Well, good segue to...
Let's just remember that Orlando lost to Cincinnati at home.
Yeah. Well, let's remember this is MLS. I mean, I think that
True.
Was kind of the point with Philly is like, you know, a weird stuff happens, and somehow Philly gets another win and another shutout in a game where both of those things could have gone the other way. But as I mentioned before, Orlando, 11 points, sitting in second in the East right now, 3-2-2. You mentioned the loss to Cincinnati beat Chicago this past weekend, I believe. This is a team that that has continued to have names. They haven't always lived up to the billing. I haven't actually watched Orlando yet. That'll be something I do this week. Have you, either of you, watched any of their games so far?
I've watched a little bit of their Cincinnati game, and they were pretty dangerous. They just couldn't. Again, they were crewing it. They couldn't do anything in the last third. They got really close, enough to make you on the edge of your seat. And then, if you're an Orlando fan, swear at the fact that they couldn't score that ball a few times, actually. And again, this is Cincinnati, so you can literally score on them at will. And Orlando couldn't do that. Obviously, against Chicago this last weekend, they were able to do that to the tune of 3-2, I believe. But it's Orlando, and Orlando is good at being feisty. It's good at being frustrating, and the crew has to figure out how to deal with that. And the best way to deal with that, you know what's the best way to deal with that?
Give it right back.
No, but that's close. Do you know what's the best way to deal with that?
No, tell us.
Score first.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That definitely, especially at home. Yeah. Orlando's scored 8 goals. They've given up 7, so the opportunity will be there. That's in 7 games. The opportunity will be there.
It's a good enough sample size. Yeah. I mean, we're at that point in the season where you kind of start seeing trends.
They've already got a win away on, or a win away from home, which the Crew did not. 1-0-2 on the road. Yeah. So
Orlando typically does.
The Crew
bring,
doesn't win road games.
No. Yeah. Come on. Well, you new here? Yeah.
I mentioned big names. Alexandre Pato is the big name now on their team. Kaká long gone. 2 goals already. 2 goals and 2 assists from former Inter Milan, AC Milan? One of the Milans. He was on one of the Milans. Junior Urso also has 2 goals, 2 assists. So, you know, I think this is a game where the Crew needs to be solid at the back, but I was going to say, Sam, the key is get that first goal. They haven't done that, what is it, 4 games now?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the opener?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's good to know that they can come back. Like,
didn't they score first in New York?
No, they scored the stoppage time goal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's
that's the last kick.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to know that, like, the Crew can't come back. Like, it's nice to have that back pocket, but, yeah, I'd rather go up first, especially at home. And Orlando is typically a team historically against the Crew that does kind of bring out a little bit of an extra gear and a little edge for our guys, for better or for worse. Sometimes it turns into will trap, you know, slotting one late, or sometimes it's losing to them like 4-1 in Orlando with a red card, and you're like, what are we doing here? So I don't know. I'm kind of thinking about Caleb's statements where he's thinking of saying Miguel needs some like scars and a little bit of edge. Maybe playing against a team like Orlando, you know, it brings out a little bit of that on this team. Like, you know, maybe we're going to see a little bit of bite. I don't know. We'll find out. But that's what I would like to see a little more.
Absolutely. I mean, just anything at this point where you see the ball go in the back of the net. I mean, it's been so frustrating these last 2 games. And I know fans hate Caleb last week talking about how well the team played, because what does that mean when you don't get a goal, you don't get points? And I understand that frustration. You know, he's not wrong. You've got to turn things around, and it's just been a frustrating 2 weeks. You hope that this begins a turnaround, because the schedule doesn't get much easier for the Crew after this. You've got Orlando at home. You've got – this was going slower than I expected.
Kansas City,
I believe. You got – well, that Open Cup game that we talked about. Then you go to Kansas City, which is never an easy place to play. D.C., who's – you don't know what you're going to get.
They beat us at home last year.
Yeah, at home. You go to New England, who hasn't started the season great. They currently sit in 13th, but you know what the Revs have.
And they've lost 4 in a row.
Yeah. But then you but by then,
who knows where
right,
they're
right at that point. And then you play the defending champions in New York City, who also haven't started well. But, again, you know what that team has.
Do we know where that game is?
I would assume it says Yankee
Stadium. It's in Hartford, Connecticut.
It says Yankee Stadium on there. I would assume it would remain there, but
not a place.
And then
we
play LAFC,
well,
who's the best team in MLS right now, so.
On national TV at home. Yeah, I mean, it's very. We can go down a rabbit hole here, but I mean, I'm going to go back. A wise man once said, "One game at a time."
For
that
sure.
Man was Greg Berhalter. I think there's still got to be a little bit of that going on here, because right now it can be very easy just to, you know, lose sight of that, the fact that it's April, right? Yeah, so
April 11th.
I was confused for a second because you started where the wise man once said, and I was expecting that the quote would be that only fools rush in.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, one game at a time works too, I guess.
They all run together.
Change
know.
The lyrics. Yeah. For when the crew enter the field. I haven't actually been in the Nordek in my two games back in the Nordek this year for that yet. Though I've never been a huge fan of that tradition. But that's
I liked it better when they sang it like during the game, because you felt like you kind of threw the rhythm of the pace. But it's a thing.
Yeah.
I think it's cool because the rest of the stadium finally got involved, as opposed to it being an end of a game tradition,
sure,
when a lot of people have already left to try to beat the traffic. That's where I stand on that.
All right. Well, that was a topic I did not expect us to touch on tonight.
We literally just, like, touched it.
Just touched it, yeah. But I didn't have that on the itinerary. Well, I hope that we did a good enough job, me sitting in Brian's seat, Grant filling in for Bart. We'll say you're Bart today. And Sam,
delighted.
You were me. We'll go with that.
Sure.
I think we did a good job covering everything, though. We all kind of saw bits and pieces.
Squeezing water out of a rock sometimes with this team and their form. So
yeah,
true.
We
did not do score predictions yet.
Oh, yeah, we do have to do that. Thank you. Grant, go ahead. Score prediction for Atlanta.
Oh, at home, 2-1 crew. I'll give it to him.
Damn it.
You can also say 2-1 crew. There's
it's
no
a very basic football line.
I will say 2-1 crew, but I will say it starts out by the crew going down first. I know, which is opposite
as
to
is tradition. Yeah.
It's opposite to what I said, that they need to score first, but I think they're going to go down one first.
I'm going to say the crew win 2-0. I think they've shown enough defensively. If they can grab that first goal, play well, you know, I think there's going to be a fire. Caleb mentioned after the loss to Nashville that he's really disappointed that there was a sellout crowd or close to a sellout crowd with everything going on with Higuain, and they couldn't even score a goal to entertain the fans. So I think that'll be an emphasis. I mean, not that it's not every game you want to score goals, you want to win games, but I think there'll be an added emphasis in this one. I would like to see a game where they score two goals and Lucas doesn't have to be one of the goal scorers. You know, he can be involved. Obviously, he's your playmaker, but... And like, real goals, too. Like, the Nagby one at the end of the New York game, as great as the play was, you know, and they all count the same. But I would just like to see this team start to get scoring confidence. And I'm going to say it happens this week. Defense plays well. Aloy makes up for that mistake at home, if he didn't in the game with the saves. And next week we're talking in a much happier sense about this team.
If Derek Etienne scores a goal, then I think you need to switch spots with Jossi, put Jossi on the wing, and put Derek as forward.
Interesting. We can pass that along to Caleb as a...
Yeah, it's a little tease for next week.
I'll watch him laugh at me.
Yeah.
That's all right. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you guys both for doing this, Sam. You're producing and talking, which is a skill that I don't know how to do either.
And eating.
Yeah. Grant was eating your food a little bit, too.
Yeah, thank you for that. Famished.
That was really good.
Grant, thanks for stepping in. Kind of late notice. We do appreciate
Always
it.
Always a pleasure.
Hopefully we'll get Bart and Brian back next week, because I'm not very good at this hosting thing, even though I think we kind of balanced it out. But thanks for Saucy. If you get the chance, come on out, try their beer. What was it, Sam? What'd you get?
It was the roasted cauliflower dip.
Oh, yeah. It
was actually
good. It
really good. It was vegetarian.
Yeah.
For the most part. There was cheese on it.
But yeah, come out to Saucy. Also, like, subscribe, all that, because that makes us happy and helps us out in some algorithmic way. Thank you all for listening. This was the Massive Report Podcast. Hopefully next week we're talking about a crew win.